Hello friends, welcome to V School once again. We are on chapter 7, further drilling down, deeper and deeper. After evolution, after meaning of financial service, types of financial service, marketing of financial service, organization structure and design, building a sales team and training. Now we are ready with the sales team, but we need to tell them what is their personal selling objectives, what are the organization vision and mission, so that there is no conflict between their personal selling objectives and the organization's mission and goals. So chapter 7 is going to help us to understand the sales related marketing policies. This will have majority of organizations' mission and goals, which needs to be followed by the salesperson. So the policies will have objectives of the salesperson. It will also help us to understand the salesperson's strategies to identify a prospect and convert him into a customer, so he will be fully equipped with the hardcore techniques that are required for converting a prospect into a customer. So let us start chapter number 7 with a very famous quote by Neil Rackham. He says, "The sales process itself plays an increasing role in creating customer value. As we have seen, selling is an experience. Selling is building relationships. And when we build relationship, we don't just sell a product, we give the product that the customer needs. And when the customer becomes satisfied, the value is created, and that is why, rightly said, sales process itself plays an increasing role in creating customer value. So the primary goal of personal selling is making sales and improving your business. Automatically, improvement of sales brings in improvement of business. Salesperson should focus on several personal selling objectives to meet these goals. And we are going to understand what all can be personal selling objectives for the salesperson. We will be classifying these personal selling objectives so that you will be very clear as to what category of personal selling objective a salesperson should be aware about. We broadly classify the personal selling objectives into two categories: the qualitative personal selling objectives and the quantitative personal selling objectives. Let us first understand what do we mean by qualitative personal selling objectives. Qualitative personal selling objectives are generally long-term and are aimed at identifying new customers. They are also aimed at retaining existing customers. So your database of customer will always increase, the business will always grow and flourish. It is not only concerned with identifying new customers and retaining existing customers, it also involves providing the know-how about the products and services. And this is where your characteristics of products, your characteristics of services, this brings out the qualitative aspect of your personal selling objectives. Especially when it comes to marketing of financial services being intangible, you need to create an impression about the world-class service you are providing to the customer. That is one of the qualitative personal selling objectives. So it not only involves identifying new customers, retaining existing customers, providing know-how about the products and services, but the ultimate aim is to produce customer delight, beyond which he should feel there is nothing to be achieved more. And once the customer is delighted, he will automatically spread a positive word of mouth publicity that will automatically bring in more customers. You should act as a financial advisor of the customer, because customer may not be able to keep pace with the changing economic dynamics. So as a financial advisor, you should be informing the customer about every small change in the product as well as their usefulness to the customer. So this is all comprises of qualitative personal selling. This list may not be exhaustive. It needs updation with the changing economic circumstances and the various products that can be offered to the customer. Qualitative personal selling objectives has to be based on the sales policies. So sales policies, which are specifically designed by the organization, are at the core, and around this core, the qualitative personal selling objectives are built upon. Having understood what are qualitative personal selling objectives, now let us understand what are quantitative personal selling objectives. Quantitative personal selling objectives basically are designed to assess, predict, and estimate the buyer's attitude and behavior. These are more or less based on the numbers, based on the inferences, on the studies made on the customer. This is specifically used for market sizing, deciding which market needs to be penetrated, deciding which market segment needs to be carved out, deciding which market segment should be exited, and uncovering the drivers for the brand and the product preference. So quantitative aspect gives you a focused, a factual information about where you are and what more can be done. Unit sales volume management is the key parameter for setting the quantitative personal selling objectives. So once you have the basic numbers, you can do easy projections, you can do easy forecasting, you can see how near you are to your budgets that have been provided to you by your organization. Quantitative personal selling objectives are adjusted from one promotional period to another, because there will be always a peak time and a slack time for every organization based on the products and the services offered in the market. They are largely aimed at capturing largest market share by selling a wide range of products and services. A very important tool to set both your qualitative personal selling objectives as well as your quantitative personal selling objectives is a forecasting tool. Let us first understand what exactly is a sales forecast. A sales forecast is an estimate of a sales volume. I once again repeat, it is an estimate, not actual. So a sales forecast is an estimate of the sales volume that may be achieved during a predetermined period in a specific market. Previously, sales forecasts were done manually. Now you have different scientific technology tools wherein you just need to feed in some important information about the past sales, about your products, about the competition, and you automatically get a report in the form of sales forecast. The first stage in creating the sales forecast is to estimate the market demand. This market demand can also be estimated with the help of various research, marketing research methodologies. And once you are clear with what is the market demand, the stage two of forecasting is to estimate the company's demand. So how near is your company to be able to grab the market demand pie? So both this matching helps you to create a sales forecast. A company's share of market demand depends upon what type of products and services they are offering, the pricing strategy, the value of the brand and different other parameters perceived by your customer. It also includes how good your competitors are in offering similar products and services. Now, again here, we can have two different types of forecasting, the macro forecasting and the micro forecasting. Let us understand one by one. First, let us understand the macro forecasting. Macro forecasting is concerned with forecasting markets in total. What in total means about? This is about determining the existing level of market demand and considering what will happen to the market demand in the future. Macro, that is the global, that is the total forecasting, is done generally at a head office level, at the top of the marketing funnel. Top executives of the banks sit together, top executives of the financial service providers sit together, and they brainstorm themselves based on their knowledge, based on their experience, based on their interactions. And the regional managers also pour in their important value to this discussion for understanding what is the overall market demand and supply. And based on this brainstorming, a ballpark figure for the estimate is done, which is very, very practical. A lot of realistic numbers are derived, and this becomes very useful for macro forecasting. The percentage of growth in both assets and liabilities of the product is also worked out on the basis of the past sales figures and experience. So this becomes a raw material for the brainstorming, based on which various combination and combinations are discussed, and that becomes helpful for setting a macro forecast. Some banks and financial service providers do this exercise on an annual basis, because generally a macro exercise done at an annual, it may not have dynamic changes on the global or the total parameters. However, some banks as financial service provider also decide to do it periodically, say on a monthly or even on a quarterly basis. Having understood what is macro forecasting, now let us understand what is a micro forecasting. Micro forecasting focuses on the concern, that is how well the product will have a share in the market. Micro forecasting is done at the branch level, where the product is actually sold based on several factors such as the geographical location of the branch, the type of customers, their preferences, the occupation of the customer, as well as the previous transactions of the customer. So if macro is done at the head office level, micro forecasting is done at the branch level, wherein the actual sales is going to happen. And for that reason, different location, different types of customers, different occupations of the customer, different transactions of the customer, small or big, will help the forecasters to decide what will be the projections in the future, what is the likelihood of different products and services that will be bought by this type of customers in that geographic location. Now, let us understand the importance of a sales budget. Because setting personal selling objectives and forecasting is not enough. You need to actually monitor whether the sales activities are matching what has been expected from the organization. Like every budget, a sales budget helps the sales organization to evaluate its performance and match the performance with the forecasting, and take action for improving on its performance. So it is not only a mirror to look into whether the actual performance is matching the forecast, but will also help the organization to fine-tune its strategy, to improve its tactics, so that they will always remain a leader in the market. A sales budget certainly gives a direction to the company and motivates its sales force to work towards the company's goals and objectives. If training is required for improving the effectiveness and efficiency, training can be given. If certain new features are to be brought in into the existing products, it can be done. If competitor is offering something which you are not offering, you can start offering. So all this can be decided for gaining a larger market share, and this is done on the basis of actually analyzing what your performance in the market by comparing your performance with the sales budget. As we have seen, the strategies and tactics revolve around the sales related marketing policies. These are decided at the head office level by the top executives. However, sales related marketing policies should be based on best practices followed by the industries and the leaders in the market. It cannot be just one way. It cannot be just one track. It has to be more realistic. It has to be suiting the best practices. It should be followed by the leaders in the market. Such sales policies should help the sales organization to plan as well as measure the sales activities for continuous improvement. One should always track and manage important metrics like cost per lead and cost per sale performance so that you get the real measurement of where your sales is heading to. Next important are the product policies. When we say product policies, it requires a proper business mix so that the financial intermediary has a wide range to offer. Most of the banks and financial service providers, they focus on low-cost products. In banking terms, we call it as CASA products. CASA specifically means CA for current account, SA for saving account. Most of the banks don't pay any interest on current account, whereas in saving account, it becomes a very nominal interest. So, which saves the cost of servicing the funds that is taken from the depositors, and in turn, this funds can be lent to the lenders for increasing the bottom lines. The salesperson has to devise innovative strategies of cross-selling over and above the basic product they are selling for which the customer has come. Because it is not necessary that a customer may require only the product for which he has come for. The customer needs to be questioned. His needs and wants needs to be analyzed. And based on that, the salesperson can cross-sell. So what type of products can be cross-sold? This can also be included in the product policies. Salesperson are also provided special incentives for selling a wide range of the bank's products. Some of the financial service providers also put specific targets to be achieved so that the salesperson is involved, motivated for rewards, and ultimately it brings out the high level of efficiency from the part of salesperson. The salesperson becomes more proactive in his approach, and the final benefits are provided to the customer because he has come for something, he gets more than that. Now we come to an important aspect of winning over the customer, that is recognition of need. A salesperson has to understand the customer inside out so that he can deliver or recommend the best product that suits for him. Apart from the basic banking services like deposit accounts, the need would be for investment vehicles like mutual funds, equity shares, large housing loans, family insurance, inclusive of health cover, and the likes. Since a financial service provider is equipped to offer not only his basic products, but because of tie-up with the third party means anything other than banking services that is provided financial services that is provided, he has to ensure that the total needs of the customer is fulfilled by having a very, very good interaction with the customer. In determining the needs of the customer, the strategy should be to check what stage of the life cycle the customer is, what stage of the family cycle the customer is. This can be obtained by discussing the age of the family members, the size of the family, the status of the head of the family, the affluence of the family, the marital status of the members, the family budget, the income available for investment, education and recreation requirement, all these features about the customer as well as his family, about the age, about the ambition, about the income available, about his status in life, about the occupation, about his awareness, about his educational level, about the skills that he has built, will help the salesperson to understand not only the needs of the customer, but the needs of the entire family. And here he can sell a wide array of products to the customer as well as his family. So we have learned how to identify the needs. Now we will be actually entering into the market. And when we are entering into the market, we should know different types of market and which target of customers are available in that market. What is a market area? A market area is a place where buying and selling happens. Target markets are group of individuals who are having a similar homogeneous need. So in a market, there can be different groups having similar needs. So we need to segment this market into different groups having similar needs so that we can give them information, we can make them aware, we can influence them, we can persuade them to buy the products and services. For example, a household sector. A household sector will have salary earners, working housewives, retired pensioners. A professional sector will have all the professionals like doctors, lawyers, teachers, transport operators, contractors, skilled and unskilled workers. An industrial sector will have sole proprietor, partnership firm, company, societies, mills, handicrafts, cottage, milk factories, etc., etc. This list is not exhaustive, but you can have different entities being a part of this sector. A trading sector can have shopkeepers, merchants, dealers, vegetable suppliers, vendors. A service sector can have garage, electricians, blacksmiths, goldsmiths, carpenters, potters, taxi drivers, rickshaw drivers, press and media, railway stations, etc. An institutional sector can have trust, block offices, development agencies, NGOs, welfare organizations, philanthropic organizations, project development offices, etc., etc. So these are just a few groups that are identified based on your real experience. You can create different types of target markets and have different entities into the target market, and that becomes very easy to segregate the market area and then launch your marketing campaigns to such target areas. A financial planner should help his client to allocate his assets on the basis of risk diversification strategies. Every customer will have risk appetite, will have risk tolerance. No two products will be same for different types of customers. However, to identify this risk appetite and risk tolerance and to recommend a product or a service depends upon the sharp eyes of a financial planner. Risk allocation is done on the basis of stage and risk preference. We have already seen the life stage. Life stage, in another way, can be a childhood, then youth, then married with children, then pre-retired, retired, post-retirement, and finally the sunset years. Risk preference is based on the investor's attitude and beliefs about the investment. So some customers may want to take risk for higher returns. Some customers may not want to take risk, just preserve the capital and be happy with small returns. The asset allocation for a young investor who has lots of years of service pending, lots of future income to come, can be from the risk-taking point of view. He has higher number of working years, he has saving potential, which is high and keep on increasing with promotions. Cash requirement is less as family children are small. He has less medical contingencies because of his younger age, and he can derive maximum benefit from compounding. The asset allocation for a married person having children can be on the basis of lesser number of working years. Cash requirement could be high because of the expenses to be made for the family as well as on the children that are grown up. He have to incur higher expenses for education, maybe for his own as well as for his children. Since the years of working are less remaining, he will have a lower risk-taking capacity, and his main focus would be making proper protection investments for retirement. The asset allocation for a pre-retirement investor can be made on the basis of, like pre-retirement, we say he has less than 5 years, like suppose a retirement, maybe he is somewhere in mid-50s. Saving potential high as education responsibility is over because the children are grown up and working with a good job. Liquidity requirement for children marriage, settlement, automatically the life of the child will change after getting a good job, stabilizing himself, his marriage needs to be arranged. The person may have to decide where to settle after retirement. Risk-taking capacity depends on the children's stability. If the children are working and established, risk-taking capacity would be high. If the children are struggling, the risk-taking capacity will be low. And there would be a need to focus on building corpus for longevity. Thank you.